Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today's February 27th, 2019. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing at 25,985, the NASDAQ at 7,554, and the S&P at 2,792. Our topic tonight is tax information, a collection of important topics and reminders, and of course, listeners' questions as well. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you're welcome to just call and give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer. The number is 610-758-8810. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. I did have a question come through the website, which I have already responded to, but I thought I might as well mention it before we get started. And the subject was Pennsylvania treatment of IRA conversion. This person is under age 59 and a half. They did a trustee-to-trustee transfer from moving traditional IRA monies into a Roth IRA. That's called a conversion. And she received a 1099-R with a code 2 in box 7, and that says what the nature of that distribution was. And a code 2 means early distribution, but exception applies. And the exception applies because it was a trustee-to-trustee transfer, I imagine. Sometimes we see code G on transfers. But a code G normally means a trustee-to-trustee transfer with no tax consequence. When we're doing a conversion of an IRA to a Roth, there is a tax consequence, so hence I assume the code 2. Her question was how to report it on Pennsylvania. On Pennsylvania, there's a form called the W-2S, and there's several columns. And one of the columns says a PA compensation, or taxation is another way to put it. Compensation really isn't a good term, but that's what's on the form. And her question was, do I put zero income in there? And that's correct, because a conversion from an IRA to a Roth is not income taxable to Pennsylvania. I will mention, as I did to this listener, that certain software may try to tax it, because even some of the, you know, more sophisticated software can get confused when you code something one way for federal and then how it flows over to the various states. It all depends kind of how information flows to the states. And Pennsylvania is a little peculiar because they don't follow federal rules. So it sometimes needs a little tweaking. So you just want to make sure if you do any kind of an IRA conversion to a Roth that it doesn't show up as income taxable on Pennsylvania. There are times when things like that would be taxable to Pennsylvania. Basically, if you take out an early distribution from a retirement account and it's in excess of the amount that you put in on a pre-tax basis, or that had basis under Pennsylvania laws. So sometimes there would be tax consequences in those situations, but this was a trustee-trustee transfer, so she's correct, should not be taxable to Pennsylvania. All right. So listeners, if you do have questions, I am taking those this evening as well, either live or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. But the phone number is 610-758-8810. So when we say I'm going to talk tonight about tax information, a collection of important topics, when we talk about taxes, any topic could be important because it's all information that any of us may have to use from time to time. We all have different situations as we go through life, different income tax situations. It might apply to you today. So it might not apply to you tomorrow. And each person's circumstances are their own, you know, unique to the individuals. So I thought I would just hit on a few odd topics a little bit that might not come up as often, but could impact you, especially as we have, you know, a more sophisticated society and how we do investing and things like that. More of these things will apply. So I thought it was important to talk about them. But one thing I did want to mention again is, where's my refund? So I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. Last week we weren't here because of the weather, but a couple weeks ago when we were talking about tax information, I mentioned how you can find out about your refund. People seem to be very interested in that. So I'll touch on that quickly. Touch on health savings accounts just a little bit. Schedule K-1 reporting, I want to go over that. That is something that not all of us see. If you are ever going to be a beneficiary of an estate or a trust, you may see this. And I think it's important to understand what kind of information may be coming to you if you're a beneficiary. But K-1 reporting could also come from a partnership interest or an S-Corp. And so I want to talk a little bit about K-1 reporting. I want to talk about foreign income tax credits for people who are investing in a broad allocation. You're diversified and you have domestic holdings and foreign holdings, international holdings. You may have foreign income taxes that you're paying through your investment accounts. I want to talk about that. I hope you're not missing out on some tax credits you may be entitled to there. A little bit, if I have time, talking about reconciling some of these items that we see on the Pennsylvania return, as I mentioned earlier, because Pennsylvania doesn't follow federal rules. I thought, you know, maybe it would be important to talk a little bit about some of the reconciling items we might have to do and why that would be important. So the first question is, how do I check the status of my refund? And it's frankly quite simple. You go to irs.gov, and there's a link for refund status. And you click on that, and the information you want to have handy before you do that is your Social Security number or your ITIN, your filing status, and the exact amount of your refund. And with that information, you can check if they've received your return, if it's being processed, and I think they'll say, you know, if it's already been mailed or deposited. So it'll give you kind of the status of your refund. Occasionally, once in a while, if they decide to pull your return to look at a little bit more closely, it might say your return's been, you know, received, but is still being processed. So again, irs.gov, click on the link for refund status. We had a call come in from Sharon in Allentown, and her question was, if using the standard deduction, can brokerage fees be deducted from capital gains on an IRA or on an investment account? Sharon, no. First of all, a couple things happen. With tax reform, they no longer allow the miscellaneous itemized deductions. And back in, you know, in 2017 and prior, if you itemized your deductions and your miscellaneous itemized deductions exceeded 2% of your page one income, you could use those as part of your itemized deductions. But the asset management fees that I think you're referring to for managing your account are only and have only ever been deductible when you have taxable income. So your IRAs, if the fees were coming directly out of the IRA, they would not be deductible. If you're writing a check for the fees, that's a different story. But that was the old rules. So that is not allowed anymore under tax reform, regardless of itemizing or using the standard deduction. You would not deduct your brokerage fees or commissions from capital gains in your IRA because there's no tax consequence in your IRA until you take a distribution. So there's all the activity that's happening in your IRA doesn't mean anything until you take a distribution. Okay. And again, it's not allowed even on regular investment accounts under the current tax reform. Now, if this reverts back in 2026, we might go back to having miscellaneous itemized deductions, and it might be a deduction then, but not right now. And again, it's typically on your on the accounts where if it's coming out directly out of your brokerage account. So right now, that's gone. Your second question was, can you itemize deductions on the state Pennsylvania return if federal was a standard deduction? Now, Pennsylvania doesn't allow itemized deductions, so the answer for Pennsylvania would be no, you can't itemize deductions on Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania doesn't allow that. Pennsylvania only gives us a couple deductions. And as we get toward the end of the show, maybe I can talk about some of those reconciling items. But it is important to note for certain states, some people do have itemized deductions in certain states. I know for sure Virginia, where we did some planning for a client, and even though it did not benefit them to itemize on federal, it benefited them even more to itemize on Virginia. So we elected to itemize on federal, even though we don't get as big of a deduction as the standard deduction. But in order to itemize on Virginia, we had to choose to itemize on the federal. And it's bottom line, the savings were more. So it depends on what state you're in. And sometimes you can do one or the other, and sometimes you have to follow federal. So you have to understand your state rules in that situation. But Pennsylvania doesn't do itemized deductions. Sharon, great questions. I hope that helped. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Steve Aronson. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, archived concerts, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And if you would like to ask questions tonight, especially in light of it being tax season, I like to kind of keep the topics fluid during tax season so people have the opportunity to ask questions if they have them. We are live. You can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can call in and give your question to Lori regardless, and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. It's the same phone number, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I will just add that I can't give, specific advice. This is general education, but happy to take questions, 610-758-8810. So we talked about where's my refund. Let's talk for a moment about health savings accounts and why I think it's important to talk about those. First of all, because health savings accounts, they have been around a long time, but really it's incredible to me how few people have them that I see on tax returns that I'm doing. Perhaps it's because younger people may be more apt to enroll in a health savings account, because in order to have a health savings account, you have to have a high deductible health plan. And who wouldn't mind a high deductible health plan, but young, healthy people who know they will never, expect that they won't have as much in medical costs, et cetera. So a lot of times young people might want a high deductible plan because it's cost less and they don't expect to have a lot of medical needs. All right. So there's all kinds of rules around a high deductible health plan. If you qualify and have a high deductible health plan, then you could qualify for a health savings account. These are general terms, okay, without getting into all the specific requirements. If you qualify for a health savings account, you can put money into the health savings account through your employer. If you're working, some people have these when they're not working. That's okay, too. But if you're doing it through payroll deduction, sometimes your employer is also putting some money in to the health plan, kind of like an extra benefit, and you do this through payroll deduction. At the end of the year, you get your W-2, and it will show on there how much you put into your health savings account. Now, you also have to know how much your employer put into the health savings account, because combined, if you're single, for 2018, the amount was $3,450. If it's a family plan, a family high-deductible health plan, the amount is $6,900. And if one of the participants, the owner, is over 55, you can put in another $1,000. So if you're 55 or older, you have a family plan, you actually could put in $7,900 between the employee and the employer. What happens, though, what I see sometimes, is people have not fully funded their health savings account. And if they have not fully funded their health savings account, they still can contribute the balance up to the maximum by April 15th of the following year. So for 2018, if you had a health savings account, this is different than a flexible savings account. This is a health savings account. You have to have a high deductible health plan. If you have not fully funded it through your payroll, you could still put that extra amount in up until April 15th. So you just have to coordinate with the account owner or account custodian, and you can put that extra amount in. And then it becomes a deduction on, what used to be page one of your return. It becomes a deduction against your income on your tax return, which is great. It's a great way to save some extra money, because normally a lot of people, we can't itemize. We don't get a deduction for our medical costs. This is a great way to get some tax-free savings toward our health costs. Now, if you aren't employed, you may be doing this on your own. Same thing applies. Maybe you put it in and you just thought, oh, I'm going to start with, $3,000, and you're single. You could put in another $450 for 2018. Or if you're married, filing joint, you could put in that extra amount, as I mentioned, up until April 15th. The amounts for 2019 for individuals is $3,500, families is $7,000, and again, the catch-up for people over 55 of $1,000. So someone who's single and 55 or older with a high-deductible health plan tied with a health savings account, you could put in, $4,500 in 2019. And a lot of people would have set that up during probably open enrollment. So if you didn't think you might have the money to do it all when you signed up for open enrollment, but you're thinking maybe you'd have it by April 15th of the next year, you could start tucking away a little bit of money into, a spare account, and then fund it, by tax time next year. All right. So that's health savings account, different than a flexible spending account. The health savings accounts are great because you can get those built up, and then you can actually invest the money that's in the health savings account, and those earnings are going to be income tax free as long as you're using the money in that account eventually at some point for your qualified medical expenses. So you can put the money in the health savings account. You might not even take any of the money out for 10 years, but eventually you can use it for medical expenses, like when you're older. You can just let it keep growing. Again, income tax-free if used for qualified health care. So that is health savings accounts. Let's talk about K-1s a little bit. So a Schedule K-1, what is that? A lot of people might not even know what one is. A Schedule K-1 is simply a tax reporting document for either beneficiaries, partners, or shareholders of a flow-through entity. A flow-through entity is a partnership, an S corporation, an estate, or a trust. So these entities have activity, and if they're making distributions, or, it doesn't always have to be a distribution, like a partnership, by virtue of this income in this entity, it flows through to the shareholders, partners, or beneficiaries. So a Schedule K-1 is a tax reporting document similar to, we get a W-2 for wages, we get a 1099 INT for interest, we get a 1099 DIV for dividends, we have a 1099 B for brokerage sales, all different kinds of 1099s, tax reporting documents, and 1099 R's for retirement. A Schedule K-1 is just another tax reporting document, but it has a you know, a whole mess of boxes and numbers that might be on it. When you get that K-1 from any of these entities, you simply take that information and put it into your tax software. Usually people are using software these days, or we, you know, give it to our tax preparer. And they will enter those numbers onto your tax return, just like they're entering all that other income that you have. Now, the issue with K-1s is sometimes we don't know what the income is going to be from those K-1s when we're, you know, doing our tax planning or projections for the year. So sometimes we don't know what the income is that's going to come from those, or we don't know what the consequences are. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the differences in those K-1s without diving too deeply into it, but just what to watch for and a few cautions on K-1s when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We are talking about tax information, a collection of important topics and reminders, and of course, listener questions as well. If you have any questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing, 610-758-8810. I also want to mention, since we're talking about K-1s, and K-1s can come from partnerships and S-Corps and businesses, for those people who are interested in either starting up a business or have a business or, you know, thinking about winding down a business, we do have an organization in our community that's available to help with mentoring and resources, and it's SCORE, Lehigh Valley SCORE, and their website is lehighvalley.score.org, so lehighvalley.score.org, and they have seminars, that they put on regularly too, which I think are available on that website. I know they have one coming up tomorrow. It's Lehigh Valley SCORE, Networking for Your Small Business, and it's, you know, at conveniently located places. So tomorrow it's at Northampton Community College. They have another one on Saturday, March 7th at Lehigh Carbon Community College that's called Starting Your Business. So a lot of different workshops and seminars that are available. And again, more information is available at lehighvalley.score.org. And that's a truly volunteer organization, much like WDIY, with a lot of great people who have retired from the corporate world and have gone on to share all their experience and knowledge. And it's really a great resource for us. So that's lehighvalley.score.org. So talking about Schedule K-1s, as I mentioned, they could come from partnerships and S-Corps. The reason I want to mention it is if you are working with a financial advisor and you're broadly diversified, you may find that you have some investments in some partnerships called Master Limited Partnerships. And these various investments will kick off a K-1 reporting. Sometimes we see this with, you know, oil, gas, and you know, various kind of enterprises like that. So the K-1s are typically, you might be a limited partner. Now, sometimes you are in a partnership and you might be a general partner, but generally these partnerships will kick off a K-1 and you check all the boxes. It'll say if you're a limited partner, it'll say if you're a general partner. What I'm talking about and referencing right now is usually these master limited partnerships, it's an investment. You might not even realize you had it. And all of a sudden you get a K-1 in the mail and it's like, oh my gosh, what do? I already gave all my tax stuff to my accountant. Well, generally, the partnerships are listed on your investment statement, so your accountant should have picked up that there are some of these types of partnerships on the brokerage statement or on the 1099. And typically they show partnership distributions and things like that. A lot of times people think those distributions are dividends. They're not really dividends. It's a distribution from the income of the partnership. The activity from the partnership actually ends up getting truly reported on that K-1. Sometimes those distributions you're getting through the year might be a return of your own investment. It's kind of hard to know. That K-1 will tell you a lot of that information. That K-1 tells how much was invested, how much was distributed to you, how much earnings there were, and it's going to tell you the breakdown. It might be business income, rental income, oil, gas, some dividends, some interest, whatever it might be. So that information gets reported in on your tax return. But a lot of times you'll see these K-1s are actually positions that you hold in your IRA. And generally, we don't have to report that information if it's held in your IRA. Now, occasionally, you will see something, and this is why I thought I better mention this tonight. A client had called and told me that she got a letter from the custodian that said, hey, you hold this partnership in your IRA, and there may be something called unrelated business taxable income, so you have to send us your K-1s when you get them so that we can determine what's taxable or not. Now, her comment was, IRAs aren't taxable until I take a distribution. What are they talking about? Well, there is this one little special provision for investments in an IRA, and it's called a tax on business income could impact your retirement account. It's unrelated business taxable income, UBTI, and it's basically if that investment is generating certain kinds of income over a certain dollar amount, then there may be a taxable distribution to you related to that. Now, it's not often that these positions in someone's IRAs would generate that much income. I think in all of the years I've done tax preparation, I don't think I've ever seen it on any clients that we have had. It's, generally you're not talking about a huge holding in someone's portfolio with this type of investment. So just be aware of it. It you're looking at that K-1, you're actually looking at box 20V on the K-1, and if it's not more than $1,000, generally there's nothing to report. All right, so that's something that you want to be aware of. And you might be getting a letter. Don't panic about it. It might not mean anything. It's just a standard letter that the custodians send out to folks saying you have to be aware of this. You own like a master limited partnership in your IRA and watch for those K-1s. But sometimes, too, people will get those K-1s and they'll just think it's a tax document that they have to report and they don't even realize it was their IRA and they might not have to report it at all. So when you look at the K-1, it'll say entity type. And if it says individual, then that's your individual account. If it says individual retirement account or IRA, then you know it's your IRA. And as long as that box 20V isn't over $1,000, you probably don't have anything to worry about. Okay? So that's in general about that type of income. What I also want to stress, though, for people who are beneficiaries of estates and trusts, you want to be careful and look at the year that's on the K-1. Trust typically have a calendar year. And so if you get a 2018 K-1, that's usually the year you're going to report it. But you might see a 2018 K-1 that isn't reportable until 2019. You might have a 2017 K-1 that has income that's reportable in 2018. And that's because estates and trusts sometimes can use a fiscal year. So if you're a beneficiary of an estate or trust, you really want to ask the executor and or trustee or attorney, whomever is your contact person for that estate or trust from which you're inheriting, you want to ask them, is there any tax information that I should expect for this inheritance, especially if you've received a distribution? Sometimes if you haven't received a distribution, you may not, you know, get anything. So you want to watch for that. The fiscal years, you want to look at that. So this is a little complicated, so I want to talk a little bit more about it, but we're at a break. So I also had a question come in. So when I come back from my break, I'll answer the question. And then I also just want to make sure we understand what's happening with K-1s and also then explain a little bit about how that piggybacks on Pennsylvania when we talk about reconciling between federal and Pennsylvania. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1, it's 6:30. Your current temperature is 33. Tonight, a slight chance of snow, freezing rain, and sleet before 1 a.m., low around 26. Thursday, mostly sunny with the high near 36. Thursday night, a chance of snow after 1 a.m. with the low around 24. Friday, snow before 10 a.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 40. And Friday night, low around 31. Saturday, mostly cloudy with the high near 42. And Saturday night, a chance of rain before 1 a.m., and then a chance of snow, mostly cloudy with a low around 29. Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 40. And Sunday night, low around 26. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We can take questions live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. Anne from Allentown called in off air, and her question was, changes regarding mortgages. What items are deductible on the federal return for 2018? Anne, thanks for your question. So what is deductible for mortgages? If you already had a mortgage pre-December, I think it's December. Let me see if I can find that quickly. December 15th, 2017. If you had indebtedness for your home prior to December 15th, 2017, then you can deduct mortgage interest on acquisition indebtedness of $1 million. So if you have $1 million mortgage, you can deduct all that interest as long as you had that before December 15th, 2017. If you entered into a mortgage after December 15th of 2017, they limit the deductibility of the mortgage interest on acquisition indebtedness of $750,000. All right. And you could also have a second home, I believe, too, prior to that. Now, what they also did, which is throwing some people off, they eliminated the deduction for interest paid on home equity indebtedness beginning in 2018. And a lot of people stopped there and didn't read the rest of the rule, which said that it's not allowed for home equity if it was an indebtedness beginning in 2018, not allowed unless the debt qualifies for acquisition indebtedness. So that's the piece that some people are missing. So you can have a mortgage and you can have a home equity loan, and you could deduct both as long as you're under the $1 million pre-December 15, 2017 or $750,000 after that. You could have the home equity indebtedness if it was for acquisition indebtedness. So if you refinanced something, took out a home equity loan or a line of credit and paid off your credit card bills or paid off your car, that is no longer deductible no matter when you took it out. So you might have taken out a home equity loan 4 years ago. If you used it to pay off your car, that's not deductible. So if all of your indebtedness, your mortgage and home equity is related to your home, then it could still be deductible. Now, Anne, having said that, they've doubled the standard deduction. So while some people may have deductible mortgage interest, if that added to your tax deduction and your charitable contributions and any medical expenses you may be able to claim, if it's not over your standard deduction, then it's for naught. And that's what we're seeing for a lot of people. If your mortgage interest is $4,000, you do no charitable giving, and your real estate tax bills are $10,000, you're at $14,000, you're married filing joint, you don't have any medical expenses, you're taking the standard deduction. So the mortgage interest combined with the other deductions may help you to itemize, but you may, when you add up all of your other deductions, may be under the standard deduction amount. All right. So I hope that helps. That's a great question, though. So talking about just some odds and ends a little bit, things to kind of bring up awareness. K-1s, you know, a lot of people do inherit. So at some point, you may inherit from an estate or trust and get a K-1. And I just want you to understand that if you are a beneficiary and you're not sure, if you're a current beneficiary and you're not sure, you want to ask the people who are managing the estate, do I have to worry about a K-1 before I file my tax return? You don't want to file your tax return and then get a K-1 and have to amend your tax return. And generally, you could have a K-1 if you got a distribution. The kicker is the estates and trusts can use a 65-day election to make a distribution after the tax year end and treat it as being made in the prior tax year. So you might not have gotten a distribution in 2018, think it doesn't apply to you, and then find out, you know, they made a distribution to you on March 1st of 2019, and they say it's part of 2018, and all of a sudden you have a 2018 K-1. All right. Fiscal years, how it works for fiscal years, and a trust in certain circumstances can elect a fiscal year. A fiscal year, what happens with the person who's filing the fiscal year, they use the tax year as for the beginning of the fiscal year. So if it's a fiscal year from October 1st, 2017 to September 30th of 2018, the tax that applies to them is 2017 rules, but the distribution is based on the fiscal year end K-1. So in that circumstance, if you have an estate that's October 1st, 2017 to September 30th, 2018, they file their 2017 tax return, they give you a K-1 for 2018, and you report it on your 2018 tax return. All right, so you got to sometimes look at those fiscal years on those K-1s. All right, estates and trusts. So I just wanted to kind of give you a little heads up on that. Where there's some issues with reconciling between federal and state is if you are a beneficiary of an estate or trust, particularly a Pennsylvania one, because it's easier to follow those, because if you're filing a Pennsylvania return for an estate or trust, you're also doing a Pennsylvania 1041, PA-41, and they issue a K-1 for the federal, but you also get a K-1 for your Pennsylvania. It's called an RK-1. Those numbers are completely different, because the federal return sometimes gives us deductions and Pennsylvania does not give us deductions. So for federal, we might have a tax return that says there's no income because maybe the legal fees and accounting fees and trustee fees offset all the income. Maybe there's excess deductions on the federal. Maybe there was capital loss, you know, carryovers on the federal. Pennsylvania doesn't give us deductions. So if we had $10,000 of income on federal and $10,000 of professional fees, there's no income passing out to the beneficiary in that case, even if the beneficiary got, you know, $1 million. No income would pass through. If the income was 10, the deductions were 10, no income's passing to that beneficiary for federal. But for state, we don't get deductions. So for a Pennsylvania beneficiary, $10,000 of income, no deductions, that beneficiary might get an RK-1 showing $10,000 of income. So when you're doing planning, you got to watch for that. It also could make a big difference if you forgot that K-1, missed that K-1, didn't know you were getting that K-1, you file your tax return, all of a sudden you have to amend it and you've got all that income that you didn't realize you had. So watch out for that. So K-1s are complicated. I guess I should let that go. I don't want probably lost a lot of listeners on that one, but it's all important information. Let me talk about foreign taxes for a minute. So a lot of people think, oh, foreign taxes. I don't have any foreign income. I don't have any foreign taxes. What is she talking about? It's too complicated. I don't want to worry about it. We've heard a lot in recent years about foreign income reporting and foreign FBARs and things like that. If you have a diversified portfolio, chances are you may be investing in some foreign mutual, you know, in mutual funds that might hold some foreign stock. You might have some foreign stock yourself. And if that is the case, what you will typically see when those dividends come in is you will also see a foreign tax that's applicable to that dividend. And it comes out of your account automatically, or it comes out of that dividend automatically. You don't really think too much about it. Then you get your 1099 at tax time, and your dividends might say, you know, $5,000 of dividends, $4,000 of qualified dividends, and $100 foreign tax credit, foreign taxes paid. And you might not know what to do with that. Maybe you've never thought about it. If you're preparing your own tax returns. Hopefully, if you're using a tax preparer, they know what to do with it, but maybe you don't pay attention to it. So the foreign tax is important because you could get a credit on your U.S. tax return for taxes you've paid on your foreign dividends. Now, it can be complicated or it can be super, super easy. So what happens is typically, and I'm going to use just the general situation, you have this 1099, it shows foreign taxes. In my example, it's $100. So these are foreign taxes that are reported on a 1099 INT or a 1099 DIV, or it could be on those K-1s that I mentioned. And when you get those, it'll show the foreign tax. It'll also show the foreign income that is related to it. So remember I said $5,000 of dividends, $4,000 qualified dividends, and maybe you have this $400 foreign tax. As you flip through the 1099 or the statement, somewhere in that statement, it's going to tell you that $100 of foreign tax was paid on what amount of foreign dividend. So in my little story here, let's pretend the foreign dividend was $2,000. So in our tax forms, there's a form 1116. It is the foreign tax credit form. It's very complicated. It's cumbersome. It's a lot of numbers, and sometimes, you know, they don't always work. You don't always understand what they are. But the IRS allows us to make an election to skip doing the form 1116 and just take that foreign tax credit directly on the tax return against our tax without having to go through all that form, without going through the 1116 form. In certain circumstances, and the certain circumstances are the foreign tax for single people can't be more than $300, and for married filing joint, it can't be more than $600. So if you have that foreign taxes on any of those 1099s that you have, and the foreign taxes are less than $300 for single and less than $600 for married filing joint, you can just check a box that you're electing not to file the Form 1116, and you can take it as a credit against your income without having to make it too complicated. Now, when you read about this, they make it sound very, very complicated. They talk about all kinds of rules. Let's see if I can go over some of these. All the gross foreign income is from interest and dividends, and all that income and the foreign tax were reported on one of those documents I mentioned, the 1099 INT, the DIV, or the K-1. You're not filing Form 4563, exclusion of income for bona fide residents of American Samoa, or excluding income from sources within Puerto Rico. So there's all kinds of other types of little rules, but generally, people who have it through their brokerage account can usually take that foreign tax credit. And why would you not if you're entitled to it? I mean, sometimes they can really add up. And if you saw $10 on the floor, would you not pick it up? If you saw $5 on the floor, would you not pick it up? So if you have foreign taxes sitting out there, why would you not take them if you're entitled to them? And the IRS makes it very easy for us, for people who have those smaller amount of foreign taxes. If the foreign taxes are higher than that, yes, you file the Form 1116. I mean, it's not so complicated that I wouldn't do it. And hopefully if you have software, the software will lead you through it. But, it does a calculation. And basically the gist of it is if the foreign income on your tax return is, getting taxed at, I don't know, I'm going to make like a 15% tax bracket, you're going to get the credit for at least that much. All right. So you're getting a credit for taxes paid to on foreign income to the extent you would pay U.S. tax on it. So there's some other little nuances of it, but for the most part, that's the basics. So don't miss out on your foreign tax credits on your tax return. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about reconciling some other Pennsylvania income to your federal return and kind of what to watch out for. If you have questions, we still have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is celebrating our birthday, and you're invited to the party. Join us for a night of live music, food, drinks, and fun to mark WDIY's 24 years in the Lehigh Valley, featuring a performance from the Large Flowerheads, paying tribute to the best music of the 1960s. Saturday, March 2nd, at the Ice House in Bethlehem. Get your tickets today at WDIY.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We are just talking about some things in the tax world, some things that you might not see as often as one might think, but it's still relevant, I think. And hopefully if you are ever faced with some of these items, whether it's K-1s or foreign income reporting or unrelated business taxable income, you'll know what to expect. You'll be aware. You'll say, I've heard of that before. And I like being informed ahead of time. I don't like surprises. I don't like unknowns. I like knowing things. So sometimes it's kind of nice to not panic if you get a letter from your custodian saying, you have to watch out for those K-1s in your IRA because you have unrelated business taxable income. Maybe there's no need to panic because nothing might be reportable. All right. So let's talk. If you have questions, we still have time. 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. And you can also send questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Let's talk for a moment about reconciling some of the items on our federal returns to our Pennsylvania return. A few years ago, Pennsylvania changed how they flowed the income onto the PA return. It used to be federal was just very different than PA. They didn't really talk to each other. Now what happens is the income, especially if you're using software, the income on your federal return will automatically flow over to your Pennsylvania return. So if you have $1,000 of, federal tax exempt income, you need to tell your software how much of that federal tax exempt income is tax exempt for Pennsylvania or not. Sometimes it's not. You might have a municipal fund that is invested in, municipal bonds all around the country, none of which may be Pennsylvania. So if you have a 1099 reflecting tax exempt dividends or tax exempt interest, and you have to drill down and see what it is and how much of it would be tax exempt for Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania may put the whole thing over there as $1,000 of taxable interest for Pennsylvania or dividends, depending on how your software works. It will pick up the numbers from federal and drop them into Pennsylvania, and then you have to work back and reconcile from the federal number to the state number. So conversely, if you have taxable dividends of, let's say, $1,000, and in your taxable dividends, you have invested in mutual funds that hold U.S. Treasuries, well, U.S. Treasury type of income, whether it's bills, notes, bonds, savings bonds, U.S. Treasury income for federal purposes is income taxable, but for state purposes, it is not taxable. So if you have $1,000 of mutual funds that might have some element of U.S. Treasuries in there, usually you look for supporting information that might come from the custodian. You know, a typical company that has those is Vanguard, and they'll have a lot of different Vanguard funds that will invest in U.S. Treasuries, direct U.S. obligations, and those aren't taxable for Pennsylvania. So you want to look to see at what percent are invested of that fund in direct obligations, and that percent applied to that dividend would be tax-free for Pennsylvania, and you have to make those adjustments. So that's how sometimes the federal and the state don't talk to each other, and the numbers aren't always going to match. So you could have some interest in dividends taxable for federal that are not taxable for Pennsylvania. And it may require you to do some manual manipulation. Certain kinds of interest, if you're entering it into tax software, for example, if you have savings bond interest, there's a special box on the 1099 INT that actually says U.S., you know, interest. And if you enter it in the proper box, that should not flow over to Pennsylvania. And that would, you know, be typically, you know, on its own line and reflect that it's not taxable for Pennsylvania. But some of these other ones are kind of buried in the mutual funds and you have to calculate it yourself. So watch out for interest and dividend differences. As we mentioned earlier, the 1099R that someone might receive from doing a conversion or taking a distribution out of an IRA account, you want to make sure that it doesn't get coded improperly and end up taxable in Pennsylvania when it shouldn't be. So you got to watch out for that. Another item that I think a lot of people miss is if you invest in an annuity contract outside of an IRA, you would do it as an investment. It's a non-qualified account. If you invest in an annuity and you take money out, you take a distribution out of it, for federal purposes, you're going to get a 1099-R. Let's say you bought an annuity for $10,000 and over the X number of years, it grew to $15,000. And you needed some money and you took out $1,000. Well, the general rule for annuities is the earnings come out first. So if you took a $1,000 distribution out of this, what is now a $15,000 IRA, or it's not annuity, excuse me, it's not an IRA. You took $1,000 out, it's going to be taxable for federal. And Pennsylvania, it's also taxable. There's usually a code 7D in the distribution box. And it's taxable for Pennsylvania, but it shows up as interest. So there's a special separate line item on the interest schedule for Pennsylvania where that the gains or earnings that you've taken out of that annuity are going to show up as taxable as interest on Pennsylvania. So you're going to want to make sure you reconcile those items. Sometimes people think it's a gain. It's a gain on your investment, and it's a capital gain, and that's not the case. This is ordinary income for federal purposes and deemed to be interest for Pennsylvania purposes. So watch out for distributions from annuities or insurance products. Where we might also see a difference is in wages, especially for people who are working in other states. If you work in other states, you have to be very careful how you're coding your wages because you have to calculate your wages as if you're a Pennsylvania resident. Typically, that is equivalent to Medicare wages. So if you work in New York, you're going to pay taxes in New York on your wages. But as a resident of Pennsylvania, your Pennsylvania wages are, you know, would be your wages here, even if they earned in New York, would be subject to tax. What Pennsylvania gives you is a tax credit for the taxes paid to New York. But they're not going to give you a credit for the taxes paid to New York for more than what you paid on taxes in there. So in New York, they allow a 401k deduction on their state wages, but Pennsylvania does not. So if you make $110,000 and you do $10,000 into a 401k, your New York wages are $100,000. Well, your Pennsylvania wages are $110,000. And you're going to get a credit for taxes paid to New York, but you're only going to get a credit for taxes paid to New York based on $100,000. So in that situation, folks who have that type of activity will always owe taxes to Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania doesn't allow us the deduction for the 401k. And that's because they don't tax us on our retirement accounts when we take it out. So there are a lot of different reconciling items between federal and state that you have to be aware of. And you want to make sure you understand the information on your W-2. Pennsylvania will send you a notice if they cannot reconcile the Pennsylvania taxable wages to what they expect it to be. And generally, there is a form for Pennsylvania. It's called the W-2 Reconciliation. This is especially helpful for anyone who does deferred comp or has some kind of a deferred comp arrangement through work. And generally, you know something's awry if the Medicare wages do not match the Pennsylvania wages. Now, there are some other reconciling items. For example, if you have life insurance through your company, they have to impute income to you if the life insurance that they provide is worth more than $50,000. So if your company gives you $50,000 of life insurance, there's nothing imputed to you. If they pay you, or if they have a life insurance policy for you one-time salary, they and your salary is $100,000, and they're giving you $100,000 of life insurance coverage, well, they have to impute the cost of that extra $50,000 life insurance onto your W-2. And that's a code C in box 12. Code C is imputed life insurance income. Now, that's not taxable for Pennsylvania purposes. So that's one of those reconciling items where the Medicare wages wouldn't match Pennsylvania. So they might adjust for that, but there will be other things. So deferred comp, it's always complicated. And what I have found is that if you fill out the W-2 reconciliation for Pennsylvania, show them how the federal wages tie into the Medicare wages, how the federal wages tie into the Pennsylvania wages, and how the Medicare wages tie into the Pennsylvania wages. There's a whole schedule with that, and there's additions and subtractions. And what I've found is if you complete the W-2 reconciliation statement and give some of the boxes are pre-filled, there's some description, some empty boxes for you to provide a description, that generally, you know, wards off notices if they can understand, oh, you went through the W-2 reconciliation, you showed them how the Pennsylvania wages tied to federal and how they tied to Medicare. That's helpful for them, and it could avoid some notices. So very important to pay attention to reconciling items from the federal to the state. I just want to mention a couple of other things that still seem to be coming up. I talked about this again a couple weeks ago. And that's the use tax. People are getting all kinds of letters in the mail from vendors where they've purchased items online through the internet, and there have not been sales tax collected. And you get a letter and it says, hey, you live in Pennsylvania, we didn't collect sales tax, just so you know, Pennsylvania expects you to pay the sales tax. We call it a use tax. If you don't pay sales tax at the point of purchase, then Pennsylvania is basically calling that a use tax for items that you've purchased without paying the sales tax, and they expect you to pay that sales tax to the extent you didn't. So that includes if you go over, you know, state border and buy something in a state that has a sales tax of 4%, you're supposed to come home and pay the difference between 4% and 6% to Pennsylvania. It's trying to keep you to, you know, buy in Pennsylvania. So if you find that, it's fairly simple to report, and it's on your Pennsylvania PA-40 tax return. When you're filing your tax information, you just include your use tax right there. So if you bought something for $100 on the internet and the sales tax should have been 6%, they didn't collect it, that's $6. You just put that as a line item on your PA-40 $6 use tax. And if you did it, you know, several times and there's 20 different items that you purchased, add up the total, calculate the 6%, and put just the tax amount in that line item and pay that use tax at the time you're filing your tax return. Businesses have had to do this for years. So Hey, folks, I'm losing my voice right here at the tail end of the show, so I think my timing has been just perfect for winding things up. What we're going to talk about next week is managing the income on your return and why. And what do I mean by that? There are just so many things that can be impacted by how much income you're reporting on your tax return. To the extent you can control it, why not? And that could apply in your retirement years. It could apply in your working years as well, making you eligible for maybe tax credits, maybe making you eligible for a lower tax bracket, maybe saving you taxes on your capital gains if we can control what tax bracket you're in, maybe saving extra premiums you might be paying on your Medicare. A lot of folks don't realize there is something called an income-related monthly adjustment amount on your Medicare premiums depending on your income from a couple years ago. You'd be surprised, and there's some workarounds for that. So next week, I'll talk a little bit about ways to manage income on your tax return. I appreciate the calls tonight. Thank you very much. And it is tax time, so we will continue to take tax questions throughout the next several weeks to help people kind of work through the myriad of tax issues. Hopefully, it is getting a little easier for those folks who are taking a standard deduction. So good luck getting those tax return filed. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, listeners. Have a good one.